ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम्, देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। Chapter 5, chapter entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Text number 13. Sarva karmani manasa sanyasyaste sukam vashi navadvare pure dehi naiva kurvanna karayan. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: when the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. Purport: the embodied soul lives in the city of nine gates. The activities of the body, or the figurative city of the body, are conducted automatically by its particular modes of nature. The soul, although subjecting himself to the conditions of the body, can be beyond those conditions if he so desires. Owing only to forgetfulness of his superior nature, he identifies with the material body and therefore suffers. By Krishna consciousness, he can revive his real position and thus come out of his embodiment. Therefore, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes completely aloof from bodily activities. In such a controlled life, in which his deliberations are changed, he lives happily within the city of nine gates. The nine gates are mentioned as follows: Navadvare Pure Dehi Hamso Lela Yate Bahi Vashi Sarvasya Lokasya Stavarasya Charasya Cha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is living within the body of a living entity, is the controller of all living entities all over the universe. The body consists of nine gates: two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, the anus and the genitals. The living entity in his conditioned stage identifies himself with the body. But when he identifies himself with the Lord within himself, he becomes just as free as the Lord, even while in the body. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person is free from both the outer and inner activities of the material body. So we welcome the devotees for the evening Bhagavad Gita class. So today we are discussing from the fifth chapter, verse number 13 to 16. 13, 14, 15 and 16. So it's a very important section in which actually Krishna is telling who is the doer of an activity. So in the first verse, the 13th verse, Krishna says, when the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. So the material body is known as the city of nine gates because now the material body has got nine holes, two ears, two eyes, two nostrils, the tongue, the genitals and anus. So because it has got nine holes, it is called as the city of nine gates. So in this verse Krishna says, when the embodied living being, that is the soul is actually trapped within the body, so it is called embodied living being, when it actually mentally renounces the actions, that means like when the living entity desires, the living entity gives up the desire for the fruits of action, and he gives up the desire for sense gratification, then he actually resides happily in the city of nine gates, neither working nor causing work to be done. So everybody in this world is actually ultimately looking for happiness. Whether a person who may take to spirituality or somebody may not take to spirituality, but ultimately everyone is actually looking for happiness. See, the soul, the nature of the soul is actually, it is pleasure seeking. See, nobody plans to get distressed. Does anybody plan that, okay, next month I will get malaria from 20th to 21st, or in the next semester I will fail in two exams? Nobody plans like that. So distress comes because every living entity actually is looking for happiness. So in this verse Krishna is saying that how can we actually get happiness? So when the living entity gives up the desire for the fruits of his activities, so then he happily resides within the city of nine gates or within the material body. So this desire is actually like when a person gives up the enjoying propensity, then he can be happy in any situation. For example, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who is the founder Acharya of ISKCON, he built a temple in Mayapur. In Mayapur, the international headquarters of ISKCON is there. So initially when the devotees went to build a temple, so they built a small hut for Srila Prabhupada. And then later on, after some months, they went on to build a big, big room for Srila Prabhupada with marble floors and with all kinds of facilities. But then then they were about to dismantle the old hut in which Prabhupada was staying. So Prabhupada said, no, do not dismantle that hut. Actually, I like to stay in that hut. But then if I stay in that hut, then nobody will come to listen to me. So that's why better I'll stay in this house. So Prabhupada was such a person who was happy in any situation because he gave the desire for his own selfish pleasure. In fact, once some devotees were making travel plans for Srila Prabhupada. So they were asking Srila Prabhupada about the travel plan. Is it all right, this travel plan, sir? Prabhupada said, any plan is all right. I am like a cow. Wherever you take me, I will give you milk. So wherever you take me, I will actually serve according to your desire. So when a person is actually gives the desire for his own sense gratification, then he can be actually truly happy. But people have the illusion that actually when a person is, when a person enjoys the fruits of his activity, then he can be happy. Like for example, in the medical textbook, there is a person called Dr. Freud, I don't know exact pronunciation. He is considered to be the father of psychology. So he, I think in the beginning of 19th century or in the late 18th century, he actually propagated a new philosophy. He actually propagated a philosophy. He said that a boy has a natural attraction towards his own mother and the girl has a natural attraction towards the father. So when a person tries to curb this attraction, so then it results in so many social problems. In other words, he actually started the philosophy of free sex. So then, before that, people were, even in Western countries, even in America and the Western countries, people were very much pious. They were practicing the principles given in the Bible. But then, the first time in the history of the world, this Freud, Dr. Freud, he actually propagated this philosophy of free sex. So because he was actually preaching this, he was also indulging in illicit sex. But then, after 20 years, first initially he wrote a book, and then after 20 or 30 years he wanted to write a second book. So then in order to write a second book, he had to practice celibacy for 4 years. So that means, when a person is actually carried away by so many sense gratificatory desires, he cannot actually focus on a particular activity. To do a particular task, one needs some focus, some control over the mind. So that is not achieved when the mind is actually trying to, absorbed in so many selfish desires. So that's why Krishna is saying that when a person mentally renounces all the actions, that means when a person renounces all the desires for activities, fruits of the activities, then he actually happily resides in the city of nine gates. Like an example is given. If we take the planet Earth, so the Earth cannot be covered. If you want to cover the whole planet Earth with a, say, cloth, it's practically impossible. But then, you can cover your legs by wearing a shoe. And when you wear a shoe, then you actually will be able to protect your legs. And then you can go anywhere within the planet Earth. Similarly, when a person wears the shoe of satisfaction, then he will be happy in any situation. Or when a person gives up the desire for fruits of activities, fruits of his actions, then he will be happy in any situation. Like Srila Prabhupada would give this story of the dog. Like once there was a dog. This dog was having a bone in his mouth. So this dog went to a river and then there he saw another dog. Actually it was his own reflection. So he saw another dog and then he saw that dog was having a bone in his mouth. So he wanted to take the bone from the mouth of the other dog. So he went towards the river and then he fell down and the bone which was there within in his mouth, that also fell. So the dog, it was actually greedy to get the bone which was there in the mouth of the other dog, which is nothing but illusion. But in the process, it lost what it had. So similarly, when a person is actually thinks himself to be the enjoyer, wants to enjoy, then he will see somebody else having the same thing which we desire to a greater extent. Then we will want to actually attain that what the others have. Then we will want to compete with the other person. Then in the process, what will happen? We will lose actually what we have, just like the dog. So actually, that is the key, that one has to actually give up the desire for the fruits of action. So then he can happily reside within the city of nine gates, neither working nor causing work to be done. So then the next verse, Krishna says, Na kartritvam na karmani lokasya srijati prabhu na karma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. So in this verse, going ahead with this verse, I just want to give few examples. How in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have examples of people who are attached to sense gratification, and we also have examples of people who do not have any desires. How they actually enjoyed happiness? For example, we have the example of Hiranyakashipu. It is described, Hiranyakashipu had conquered all the directions. Sa yittam nirjita kaku. He had control over all the four directions. And he could enjoy as much as he wanted. He had so much of capacity to enjoy sense gratification. And he could, and everything was available. He had the ability also. But then, Natripyat Ajitendriya, but then he was not satisfied because he was the servant of the senses instead of controlling the senses. On the other hand, we have the example of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, he was not envious of the Vaishnavas, unlike the other demons. And then Prahlad Maharaj was not agitated. Even when he was put into the most dangerous situation, normally when a person goes through a difficult situation, immediately will be agitated. But because Prahlad Maharaj, he had no desire to enjoy, he was not agitated even when he was put in the most dangerous situation. And Prahlad Maharaj did not desire the fruits of his action, either directly or indirectly. And not only that, Prahlad Maharaj considered everything material to be completely useless. So he did not desire anything for his own sense gratification. And he had perfect control over all senses and life here. And we have other example, like Indra. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Shri Gopal ji ki jai, Shri Gornitai ki jai. Say for example, Indra. So there was a king called Prithu Maharaj. So Prithu Maharaj was performing sacrifices, Ashwamedha sacrifices. So as soon as Indra came to know that this Prithu Maharaj is performing so many sacrifices, he actually became very much envious. And he came to actually stop those sacrifices. Because Indra actually wanted to, he was actually afraid of his position. He considered himself to be the enjoyer. And then when he heard this, there is another competitor for his own, then he immediately tried to stop his sacrifices. On the other hand, when you see the example of Prithu Maharaj, this Maharaj Prithu, he was an example of a person who is described in this verse. He had no desire for personal sense gratification. When actually Lord Vishnu appeared in front of Prithu Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj prayed that actually I do not desire any of the material benedictions which the living entities in this world may want. In fact, such material benedictions are available even for persons who are there in the hellish planets. So I do not desire any of them. It means he was completely satisfied. So when a person gives up the desire for sense gratification, he will be completely satisfied. So then in the next verse, Krishna is saying, the living entity does not create the activities, nor does he induce the people to act, and nor does he create the fruits of action. So Krishna is using the word na three times. He does not create, he does not create the fruits of action, he does not induce other people to act. So because he wants to very firmly tell that the living entity is not the doer. So when we think ourselves, when a person does a particular action, then he has the right to enjoy the fruits of the action, isn't it? When you do a particular activity, then you get some certain results. Then you have the right to enjoy the fruits. So when you are not the doer, then you do not have any right to enjoy the fruits. So that is why Krishna is saying that, wants to clearly tell that the living entity is not the doer. He is using the word na three times. He does not create the action. He does not create the fruits of action. Nor does he induce people to act. Sometimes one may act as an agent. He may not do the activity, but then he may act as an agent. Others may be doing the activities on his behalf. So Krishna is saying he is not even an agent. So he wants to clearly say that the living entity is not the doer. So the living entity, the soul is actually pure. So when the soul identifies himself with the material, when the soul wants to enjoy independently from God, then he comes in contact with the three modes of material nature. Sattvagun, Rajogun and Tamogun. The soul by nature, it is actually eternal servant of God. So we have to somehow, at present we are actually misidentifying ourselves with different designations. We may identify ourselves as a Indian or a Maharashtrian or this material body. So when we misidentify ourselves with different designation, then we actually try to find happiness through this misidentification. So then we will not get actually proper happiness. So it is explained, there are actually four kinds of consciousness. Jagruti means wakefulness, and Swapna, that means dream, and Sushupti, that means deep sleep in which there is no dream, dreamless deep sleep. And then the fourth is Samadhi, or the pure consciousness in which the living entity realizes himself as the eternal servant of God. So once a king was dreaming. So in his dream, he was actually seeing a butterfly. So then, he was wondering, the butterfly was moving here and there. And after something he wondered, am I a king dreaming to be a butterfly? Or am I the butterfly dreaming to be the king? So he was completely confused whether he is a butterfly dreaming to be the king or king dreaming to be the butterfly. Actually, the fact is, he is dreaming as the king, and within that dream, he is actually dreaming as the butterfly. So he is dreaming as the king. So that is like the Jagruti state. At present we may be in the wakeful, we are awake. But then actually it is not the complete, we are not completely awake. Because at present we are identifying ourselves with different designations. Just like the king was thinking himself to be the king, we are dreaming ourselves to be, say, an engineer or a doctor or an Indian or a human being, etc. But actually we are the pure spirit soul, part and parcel of God. And within that dream, we are actually dreaming to be something else. Just like in the night, we dream of something else. So we have to ultimately come out of this dream and come to the original situation as part and parcel of God. So we think ourselves to be the doer, and because of that we actually want to enjoy the fruits of action. But actually, living entity in its pure state, he is not the doer. When the living entity wants to enjoy independently from God, he comes in contact with the material nature, with the three modes of nature, and then he becomes covered by this three gunas, sattva gun, mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. So then, at different times he is having different desires. So this living entity covered by the material nature, he is actually the doer. The pure living entity is not the doer. So then, in the next verse, so then one may ask the question, okay, you say that the living entity is not the doer, you are saying the material nature is the doer, or the living entity covered by the material nature is the doer. So, but then, ultimately the material nature is controlled by the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is actually the controller of the material nature. So that means the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord is the actual doer. So then, he is responsible for the sinful reactions. I should not be held responsible for whatever wrong activities I do. Suppose a person may kill a person. Then one may say, see, Gita is saying the living entity is not the doer. The material nature is the doer. And the material nature is ultimately under the control of the Supreme Lord. So that means this God is a doer. God only has killed this man. I did not kill. So I should not be punished. So a criminal may argue like that. So immediately in the next verse, that is why Krishna is saying, Nadatte kasyachit papam na chaiva sukritam vibhu ajnane navritam jnanam tena muhyanti jantavaha. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Embodied beings, however, are bewildered because of the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. So one may say the Supreme Lord is a doer, so I should not be held responsible for the reactions of my sinful activities. But then Krishna is saying, the Supreme Lord does not assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. Because only the living entity thinks himself, because he is covered by ignorance, he thinks, oh, the Supreme Lord is a doer. I should not be held responsible. The Supreme Lord is just like a judge. Suppose a criminal commits a murder. So judge gives a judgment, hang him, or give him life imprisonment. The criminal may say, see, judge is actually having so much of enmity towards me. He is actually putting me in jail, one may say. But is that actually true? No. Judge is acting as an impartial person. Judge may tell the executioners to actually hang him. So actually, who is killing? The executioners are killing. The act of killing is carried out by the executioners. And judge sanctioned the execution, and the executioners are under the control of the judge. So one may say, actually judge has killed me, judge has given the punishment. But then, actually, the punishment which the criminal has got is actually created by the criminal himself. Not by the judge. Judge is the ultimate doer, but then the criminal is the primary doer. So there are three doers, the living entity, the material nature, and the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the ultimate doer. The Supreme Lord is doing the activity through the material nature. But then, the living entity is the primary doer because he first of all made the desire to do that particular activity. So because he made the desire, he is supposed to get the reaction. Like, to give another example, like suppose, so you are going from this temple to Grand Road. You take a taxi. You tell the taxi wala, please take me to Grand Road station. So he takes you to Grand Road station. So after coming there, after reaching Grand Road station, if he says like, why did you bring me to Grand Road station? Should have taken me to Bombay Central. And taxi wala said, no, you only told me to. You only told me to come to Grand Road station. That is why I brought you. So the actually, the person who was driving the taxi, he is like the super soul, the Supreme Lord. He is doing the activity, through the material nature, the car. He cannot do the car contains engine, so many parts are there. So the material nature is like the car. So the Supreme Lord is doing the activity through the material nature. The taxi driver is driving the taxi. He is actually taking the person to the Grand Road by driving the taxi through the help of material nature. But then, ultimately, who made that decision to go to Grand Road? The passenger was sitting in the taxi. He only told the taxi driver, take me to the Grand Road station. So similarly, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate doer of an activity. He does the activity through the material nature. But then, the living entity made that first desire, I want to do that activity. So because of that, he will get a certain reaction. So because he is the primary doer, he should be held responsible for his actions. So the previous verse, Krishna said, the living entity is not the doer. Material nature is the doer. There, because Krishna said, living entity is not the doer, because living entity wants to enjoy the fruits of the action. But actually we are not the doer, because we are, to do any activity, we need the help of the material nature. And we need the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, without the help of the material nature, we cannot do the activity. Since we are not the doer, then we cannot enjoy the fruits of the action. So one may, when we understand we are not the doer, then we are not supposed to enjoy the fruits of the action. But then one may extend this to another extent and one may say that, okay, I should not be held for my sinful activities because I am not the doer. But then, that is why immediately Krishna says, I do not assume any sinful and pious actions of the living entity, because I simply sanction based upon the desire of the living entity. Or to give you another example, suppose a child wants to lift a weight, but then the child is not able to lift the weight. So the father comes and then he is standing up and then he is helping the child to lift the weight. So actually, father only did the activity of lifting the weight. But then, the primary doer is who? That is the child. Because he only made the desire to lift the weight. So because he made the desire to lift the weight, father helped him to lift the weight. So similarly, the living entity is the primary doer. and the Supreme Lord is the ultimate doer. Material nature is like, Lord does the activity through the medium of material nature. And another interesting word in this verse is, Krishna says, Na chaiva sukritam vibhu. Nor does the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. So the word used is vibhu. Vibhu means Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, the Sanskrit word vibhu means the Supreme Lord who is full of unlimited knowledge, riches, strength, fame, beauty and renunciation. So, coming to the original point, like the accusation of the living entity, I am not the doer, the material nature is the doer, that material nature is acting under the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord is the actual doer, so I should not be held responsible for my actions. So one may say like that. So, but here it is mentioned, the Supreme Lord is known as Vibhu. That means, he is full of all the opulences. So when a person is actually full of all the opulences, why would that person want to put another person into trouble, or why would that person want enjoy the like another person suffering, or you understand? Like the Supreme Lord is known as Vibhu. The living entity says that I should not be held responsible for my actions. Ultimately, Supreme Lord is only doing. He should be held responsible. But then Supreme Lord is like completely neutral. He has all the opulences. So why would he want the living entity to suffer, or why would he want to enjoy the fruits of the action of the living entity? Krishna is full in all opulences. For example, just to give one example, here Prabhupada says he is full in beauty, knowledge. There are six opulences: beauty, knowledge, fame, renunciation, wealth. So for example, Krishna's beauty, it is described in the scripture Srimad Bhagavatam. When Krishna was entering Dwaraka, it is described, Sitata Patra Vyajanair Upaskrita Prasuna Varshair Abhivarshita Pati Pishanga Vasa Vanamalaya Babau Gano Yatar Kodu Pachap Vaidyutai. So, just now, people are actually waiting for rainy season. So people are suffering due to scorching heat. So yes, maybe like 3 hours back, 3-4 hours back, sun was present. Now sun has disappeared, moon is there. So when the morning comes, moon will go and then sun will come. Is there a possibility of sun and moon being present simultaneously? Both are present simultaneously, but can you see sun and moon being present simultaneously? No. When sun is present, moon's presence becomes completely insignificant. And when the rainy season comes, initially there will be clouds. When the clouds disappear, there will be lightning. When the lightning comes, you cannot see the clouds, or you cannot see the rainbow. When the clouds and rainbow are present, we cannot see the lightning. But here, when Krishna was entering Dwaraka, it is described that Sitata Patra Vyajanair Upaskrita. So Krishna, when he was entering, Krishna's head was covered from the scorching heat of the sun by a white umbrella. And when he was walking, there were the peacock, the chamaras. When you see the aarti, they offer chamara. So the chamara fans were moving in a semicircled manner. And flowers were falling from the sky on the path. And Krishna was wearing a yellow dhoti. And that produced such an effect. Not only that, Pishanga Vasa Vanamalaya Babu. And he was wearing a wonderful flower garland and he was wearing a yellow dhoti. And the whole situation, it appeared as if sun, moon, lightning, clouds, and rainbow all are present simultaneously. So Krishna's body was compared to a blackish monsoon cloud. And the umbrella which was there on the top of Krishna's body was like sun. And the chamara fans which are moving in the semicircled manner, it appeared like moon. And the flower garland and the yellow dhoti which Krishna was wearing, it appeared like rainbow. And it appeared like the rainbow and the lightning. So the whole scene was such that sun, moon, lightning, clouds, everything was present simultaneously. So such is the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So people in this world, they are attracted to beautiful persons. But it is described that when Krishna was entering Dwaraka, people were nityam nirikshamananam. Although people were accustomed to seeing Lord Krishna every day, they were never satiated by seeing Krishna's form. Normally, when a person sees a beautiful person, he'll be attracted. But then when you see the same person day after day, every day, after some time, the attraction no longer remains, especially for the physical body. Because the material beauty actually disappears after some time. But then when Krishna was entering Dwaraka, although people were accustomed to seeing Krishna's form every day, still they were never satiated by seeing Krishna's form again and again. So we can see that how Krishna was full in opulences, full in beauty. Let us take the example of power. How Krishna was full in power. For it is described, when Parikshit Maharaj was there in the womb of his mother, he was attacked by Ashwatthama, and Ashwatthama released a Brahmastra. So Brahmastra is like a millions of times greater than the modern nuclear weapon. Just some nuclear bombs destroyed the whole city of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But Brahmastra can produce such scorching heat thousands of times greater than the modern nuclear weapon. And when Ashwatthama released that Brahmastra on Parikshit Maharaj, so Krishna appeared within the womb to protect Ashwatthama. And he released his Sudarshan Chakra. So how he destroyed the Brahmastra, in comparison to Sudarshan Chakra of Lord Krishna, he actually evaporated the heat produced by the Brahmastra, just like sun evaporates a dew drop. Suppose when there is a dew drop, how much effort that sun has to produce to evaporate a dew drop? It's completely insignificant. See, similarly, that was the power of Krishna's weapon, that was the power of Krishna. And we can go on many examples, but it's not much time. So we can see that when a person, that's why Krishna is using the word vibhu, because the Supreme Lord is full with all the opulences, so when he is full with all opulences, so why will he want to enjoy, why will he want to interfere with the living entity, to enjoy his fruits or to give sinful reactions to that living entity? So there is absolutely, it does not make sense. That is why Krishna is saying that I do not assume the sinful or pious activities of a living entity. I simply sanction whatever the living entity desires, based on whether he deserves it or not. So then, further, in the next verse, Krishna says that when a person, what is the result of this understanding? So in these three verses, Krishna actually told who is the doer. The living entity is the primary doer, the material nature is the secondary doer, and the Supreme Lord is the ultimate doer. The living entity is the primary doer because he made the desire, so that is why he should be held responsible. But then he cannot enjoy the fruits of the action because ultimately the activities are carried out by the Supreme Lord through the medium of the material nature. So when a person understands this knowledge, what is the result? So that Krishna says in the 16th verse. He says, Jnanena tu tad agyanam yesham nashitam atmana tesham aditya vajnanam prakashayati tatparam. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So just like when the sun is present, we can see all the objects clearly. What is what? We can see everything. What is there what? Similarly, when a person gets real knowledge, when a person gets the knowledge that who is the doer, what is the position of the living entity, what is the position of the Supreme Lord, what is material nature, when a person gets this real knowledge, then he will actually, his nescience will be completely destroyed. He will know what is what. And Prabhupada explains that how do we actually get this knowledge? One can get this knowledge through the medium of a spiritual master. When a person gets the mercy of a devotee, then he can get this knowledge. So when you, in the case of mundane knowledge, like when a teacher is teaching a knowledge to a student, teacher in his personal background, personal life, he can be very sinful. He may be having all kinds of bad habits. Still he can teach the knowledge to the student. And the student also may have all kinds of bad habits. And he can also, still he can get the knowledge from the student, from the teacher. In the case of mundane knowledge transmission, the student, it does not matter whether the teacher or the student has a good character or not. But in the case of spiritual knowledge, if a person wants to get spiritual knowledge, then both the teacher, both the attitude of the teacher and the student are important. The student has to be submissive and the teacher has to be bona fide. And he has to come in the bona fide disciplic succession. So one cannot understand theoretically. Even to get a mundane knowledge, one needs the help of a guide. What to speak of the spiritual knowledge? So Krishna says later in the 10th chapter, Name vidusuragana prabhavamna maharishaya aham adirhi devanam maharishinam cha sarvashah. Wherein Krishna says that even the great demigods do not know me, and nor even the great sages know me, because I am the origin of all of them. So the demigods, although they are very powerful, because they are attached to enjoyment, they do not know Krishna. And the sages, they may not be attached to enjoyment, although they may be very much renounced, but still they do not know Krishna. Because in order to get knowledge about Krishna, enjoyment or renunciation is not the qualification. What one needs is one needs the mercy of a devotee. That is why here in this purport, Prabhupada says, even though a person may be full in knowledge that he is not this body, but transcendental to the body, he still may not be able to discriminate between both soul and super soul. One may understand that he is not the body, that he is a spirit soul, but still such a person may not be able to discriminate between the soul and the super soul. So in order to actually understand that we are not the body, but we are the soul, and especially to understand, to realize that we are actually part and parcel of God, in order to get that knowledge, one needs the help of a spiritual master. And lastly, I just want to tell one small detail in this verse. Krishna is saying, Yesham Nashita Matmanaha Tesham Aditya Vagyanam. When a person gets real knowledge, then all his ignorance will be destroyed when he completely knows that what is soul and what is super soul, what is the living entity and what is the Supreme Lord. Especially here Krishna is using plural. Tesham means it actually comes in the, it is not a singular, it is plural. So there is an important point in that. The point is that when a person gets real knowledge, or when the living entities get real knowledge, then he knows what is the position of the super soul and what is the position of the living entity, etc. So that means even in the liberated condition there are living entities. It is not that everyone becomes God. So there is a philosophy in India or in the world. People think that ultimately when a person gets real knowledge, then all of us become one. All of us become God. So people think we have to practice Krishna consciousness till the time we become God. So ultimately everyone is God. Right now we have just forgotten that we are God. But then by practicing spirituality, we can actually become God. But then here Krishna is saying, he's using the plural, that means even in the liberated condition, the living entities are there. It is not that everyone is one. If everyone is one, then he should be using the singular tense. Singular this thing then. Means there is no differentiation between one living entity and another. But he is using the plural. That means even in the liberated condition, there are living entities, many living entities are there. So that is a point that the second chapter also Krishna said, Natvevaham Jatu Nasam, Natvam Neme Janadipa. He said, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor any of the kings in the battlefield. And nor in the future shall any of us cease to exist. That means in the future also, even in the liberated condition, even when a person achieves perfection, he will continue to exist. So the point is, living entity is eternally a servant of God. It is not that, okay, you have to act like a servant of God at present, and then when you become perfect, you will become God. No, he is eternally a servant of God. That is why Prabhupada quotes this second chapter verse in the purport of this verse, to say that this identity, this individuality in the spiritual life is permanent. So, if anybody has one question, I'll just take it. Otherwise, stop.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your kind lecture. I want to know that in this spiritual world, we don't have that much of this anger or this fear and lust like that. But when we go to material world, there are maya, means we are covered in the material world, we are covered with maya. One is yogamaya and mahamaya. So in material world, how to means get rid of this maya, and how we can means get out from this lust, anger and fear.
So that is the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita. So at present, the living entity is actually having material consciousness. So soul by nature is actually eternally part and parcel of God. So our original consciousness is Krishna consciousness, God consciousness. But at present, our consciousness has become covered because of contact with these three modes of material nature. So we have to revive our original consciousness. So this Krishna consciousness, like the Krishna consciousness is not something artificial. It is actually present within everyone's heart. It is dormant within everyone's heart. It is not that like something we are trying to practice something like artificially. Like suppose when you want to, when you chant Coca-Cola, 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 it is an artificial process. You are artificially trying to do something. But then when you chant this Hare Krishna Mahamantra, we can actually revive this original consciousness which is dormant within one's heart. When a person practices his devotional service, beginning with this chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and taking prasadam, and hearing about this, hearing about Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, then our original consciousness will be awakened, which is lying dormant within our heart. Just like wood, within a wood, fire is present within the wood. Like the sun, heat, sunlight is actually stored within the wood. But then, when the wood comes in contact with the fire, or when the wood like rubs with another wood, when there is friction, so then the fire which is there within the wood, it actually comes out. So similarly, the Krishna consciousness is not something artificial, it is actually dormant within our heart. So when we come in contact with the devotees of the Lord, who are actually Krishna conscious, when we come in contact with this devotional service, the process of hearing about the Lord, process of chanting about the Lord, that is like fire. So then, when you come in contact with the fire, then the fire which is stored within the wood, it comes out. So similarly, the consciousness, Krishna consciousness which is there, dormant within our heart, that will come out when you come in contact with the spiritually enlightened people, when you come in contact with this process of devotional service. So that is the whole purpose. We have to begin with chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And most importantly, we have to regularly hear about this Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Then one can actually overcome the effects of Maya. It's a very gradual process. So one has to just stick to the process and one will definitely see the effect. So I will stop here. श्रीमद् भगवद्गीता की जय, श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय।